Hey, Truck Roy here, and we're on the Riding Shotgun Show. I have Lord Nelson with us, which he's been on my show several times before in the past. And then I have Horace with us, and Horace is a new guest to the show. Horace does an MP3 podcast download, and is it Ham Radio Show too as well, Horace?
No, it is just a MP3 podcast, basically.
Okay, well, I recently was made aware of it by Lord Nelson, and it is one of the most entertaining, well, probably the most entertaining white nationalist type radio show that I've heard in a really, really long time. And you got a lot of creative imagery in there, which creativity hasn't been the strong point of our media, but I'm really liking what I'm hearing from you, Horace. Now, you know Lord Nelson from Whitaker.com?
I know Lord Nelson from www.whitaker.com. Is it Whitaker Online? Let me check it here. It's whitakeronline.org.
Okay. And so you guys are both students of Bob Whitaker.
We're both students of Bob Whitaker, yes.
Yeah. Now, for the audience members that don't know who Bob Whitaker is, Lord Nelson, you want to fill them in a little bit on who Bob is?
Well, Bob Whitaker has a very different view of the whole situation with the ongoing genocide against whites. He really does point the blame where it's at, rather than just going on about how beautiful white race and how wonderful we are. He really does sort of just tell it like it really is. It's not, he has a sort of very unique approach to the situation that we all find ourselves in. And I'm proud to call myself a Whitakerite.
Right.
I would say.
I had Bob on one of my first shows, and when I first read Bob Whitaker's post on Stormfront, I knew he was a smart guy, but a lot of what he was saying was going right over my head. And it helped to understand that basically what he's trying to do is boil things down into little memes or little catchphrases that will cut right to the chase and will make the point in a positive way. And that's kind of what you try to do in your show is use those memes a lot, right, Horace?
Well, exactly. What we're doing is the objective is to get every little white rabbit everywhere, all the indigenous white rabbits of Europe, as we call them, on a consistent message, to have them saying something just like you heard in the Obama campaign. Oh, yes, we can. I want you on a consistent message so you always have something to say and what to say and when to say it, that type of thing.
Right, and now this is a pretty simple thing, but I think it's very difficult for people to get into their heads because it's not something that we unconsciously do. It's not something that we do in random conversation. We like to analyze things, try to figure them out, argue about them, but that's not what this is about. It's not about arguing something or trying to convince somebody of something through logic, right?
Oh no. You cannot convince anyone because you're dealing with, for lack of a better word, a lot of people. Doesn't matter how smart they are, but they've been heavily, heavily conditioned. The term would be brainwashed.
Go ahead, Lord Nelson.
I was going to say we're actually dealing with psychological warfare here, and
right,
we're so obsessed with the fact that we are right. We try to get every detail, statistics, everything like that. But this is psychological warfare. This actually goes back to the playground. Calling kids names. That's it. It's very gutter. It's very dirty. But, you know, we're just fighting fire with fire.
Right, but what we're talking about is we're not talking about calling somebody names like, you know, calling somebody a nigger or something like that. We're talking about something a lot more effective, right?
What we're talking about in American terms would be a nana 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 over and over again. Nana 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 over and over again. You get called a racist, I don't want you responding to that any other way, but in your opinion I'm a racist, you're just saying that because I'm white. Anti-racism is a code word for anti-white. Over and over again.
So if somebody listens to you and they tell you that you're a racist, Horace, then you're going to tell them that
in your opinion I'm a racist, you're just saying that because I'm white. Anti-racism is a code word for anti-white.
All right. So, okay, and you just basically keep pounding them with that until you get it through their head.
What they're going to do is either lay off, which they do to me, or they are going to challenge that, say, no, it's not just our opinion. You say, wait a minute. No one's flooding Mexico with non-Mexicans in some attempt to end racism and quote-unquote trying to force integrate them and quote-unquote to create some blended humanity. You know, it's genocide. No one's flooding Japan with non-Japanese and giving them affirmative action, special rights and privileges, and free health care, and quote-unquote integrating and assimilating them in some attempt to create some blended humanity there. It's genocide. No one's flooding Africa with non-Africans and giving them affirmative action, free health care, special rights and privileges, in some attempt to create some blended humanity. It's genocide. Only white children are being affected by this. Only white countries are doing it. Only white leaders are supporting this. It's genocide.
All right. Now, do you get a lot of confused looks at this point?
Oh, sure. Sure. What you're doing is you're taking a standard approach that they've been conditioning in, and what you're doing is reconditioning. You're giving a big nana-nana-nana. You're hitting them on the head with a hammer. The simple one to get down is, in your opinion, I'm a racist. And a lot of times they'll sit there and try to argue and then realize 5 minutes into it, when I do the same thing over and over again, that, yes, it is an attempt at genocide.
Right. And now let me play the dumb guy who doesn't quite get what's going on here. And I am. I mean, it's taken me a while to get what you guys are saying here. So what you're saying is that what the multiculturalists are doing, like our leaders or anybody that's trying to bring non-whites into our country, is essentially genocide.
Yes. Yes. They have to enforce diversity. It's a closed society. They're saying they own the truth on diversity in only white children's homes. They say they own the truth on race in only white countries. They're saying that they're going to destroy the nation state. But they're not destroying the nation state in Asia or Africa. Only white children are being affected by this. So under international law, it is genocide. It's a clear and consistent targeting. And what we are doing is, in effect, as Lord Nelson says, psychological warfare. You are pointing this out again and again, and you're reconditioning. You're conditioning your environment.
Very important point. If you listen to Horace Wace, where he's coming from, his response is not something like, oh, but blacks commit a lot more crimes, or blacks don't have any civilized societies in Africa. You just ignore all that. This is a Whitaker-like approach. This is why Bob Whitaker, in my opinion, is so special. It's not trying to justify our right not to be made extinct, or our right not to be placed in our own damn countries. It's actually coming back at the person by just telling them that they're just an anti-white racist, in effect.
So this is not defensive. It's a lot more offensive.
It's a blitzkrieg. It's how we operate. It is full spectrum practical politics.
Now that practical politics, let's get to that word for a minute, because I've heard in your show, you at the beginning of every one of your shows, you say, I'm going to teach you practical politics. Define practical politics.
Practical politics is simply non-voting politics. It's what a little white rabbit does, or any white rabbit, or any rabbit, period, what you do when you open up your mouth. Practical politics is something every human being plays. Or we could say every white rabbit plays, or all rabbits. What I want you doing is playing our version. That's it. That is practical politics. Practical politics is what happens on Fox News when they're reading a talking point. Practical politics is what happens when a bunch of Democratic rabbits say, oh, yes, we can. It's simply talking points. It's staying on message. It is the basics. It's the basics to human behavior. It's the basics to human communication, which leads to behavior, which conditions behavior.
Okay, so when you say, oh, what? Yes, we can, that was the talking point from the Obama campaign.
Sure.
And it wasn't just an accident, and it's something that people just kind of picked up and ran with. You're saying that...
Oh, no. Oh, no. They spent millions and millions of dollars developing it, just like Coca-Cola would develop, spent millions and millions of dollars developing Drink Coca-Cola. I can't think of who developed, but there's a science behind it. There's a science behind what Bob Whitaker does. That's why Bob Whitaker was hired by people in high places to do it for them, in Washington and the CIA and whatnot. He's very gifted at this. But you see, we're not selling a brand. We're not doing what spinning BS like the politicians. What we are doing is we are sowing seeds. We are basically weaving velvet. That is what it's called. We're weaving velvet. We're undermining a closed society. They have to enforce the rules. They have to enforce diversity by gunpoint more and more, simply because it's going to all come down, and the little white rabbits listening to this are going to go to a part of the planet, and these guys running Anglosphere in France and some other places are never going to have power ever again. You see, they have to enforce it.
All right. Okay. Now, for the average listener out there that's listening to this and going, whoa, you're blowing my mind here, let me tell you this. you can go look up Bob Whitaker, and he did work for the CIA. He was in the Reagan administration. He's posted on Stormfront a lot. You know, this is what this guy really, really did. And if you don't believe that these little talking points can work, you know, Bob Whitaker is proof that they pay people big money to figure this stuff out. Now, if you go and listen to Horace's show, and you right now, you might be really intrigued by what he's saying, talking about white rabbits and stuff. Why don't you give them, where can they find your show, Horace?
Well, if you go to www.whitaker, W-H-I-T, let me get up the site, www.whitakeronline, that's W-H-I-T-A-K-E-R, online, O-N-L-I-N-E.org, and you look at the top right, you're going to see Bob's blog. If you hit Bob's blog there, you're going to go right to the actual blog and where different people communicate. And then if you go down the right, you're going to see Truck Roy Radio on the right. Underneath Truck Roy, you're going to have White Rabbit Radio, and it's very easy. Just follow the White Rabbit. It'll take you right there, and you're going to get my actual MP3s of the current system you're in. You're going to get the current talking points I want you on. Very simple. If you only do one of them, and when you're called a racist, just say, in your opinion, I'm a racist. You're just saying that because I'm white. Anti-racism is a code word for anti-white. Don't argue. Walk away. Keep conditioning it.
Right.
That's all I want you to do.
Right.
A five-year-old can do it. If you don't want to do it, give it to your little brother or sister to do. It doesn't matter. By the way, you can give it to Africans to do. In your opinion, he's a racist. You're just saying it because he's white. Anti-racism is just a code word for anti-white. It doesn't matter who says it. It's dynamic.
So it's a weapon in anybody's hands. It's just we need to start wielding this weapon. And, you know, you mentioned that little kids can pick up on this. And if I were to guess, I imagine little kids could pick up on this better than most adults could.
Yes, because they do it and they don't question it.
Right.
Having a little kid say the same thing over and over again, and everyone listening to this has been through those little devils, they will say the same thing over and over and over again. They will ask the same question over and over again. Repetition is key.
It is. And you get a lot of repetition in your show. Now, talking about going, you know, little kids have open minds. And now I want to say something to my listeners out there. Now, if you go and you listen to Horace's shows, which I highly, highly recommend you do, because what he's telling you and what he demonstrates in his show is just critically important, effective weapons that we can use. But go in there with an open mind. And I've listened to quite a few of your shows, Horace, and you go into topics that I'm like, whoa, this is like science fiction. I'm not on board with this. But I got to tell you, it's entertaining stuff. And at the same time, you're making that point. You're doing those little memes, that na-na-na-na-na, over and over again. And it's something that I can learn from and be entertained at the same time.
The objective is to do something new and to give you something you've never heard before, but at the same time, bring it back to topics you've heard every single day. Everyone listening to this knows who sung Hit Me Baby One More Time. Sound is like that. Sound is everything. Sound is a vibration, and everything starts with sound. You can dodge a bullet, but you cannot dodge sound. Sound is violent. Sound can do all those things. If I say achy, breaky heart, if you're a country boy, or even if you're not, I mean, Billy Ray Cyrus sung that song. It just ripped through your mind. If I say, help me, help you, you know exactly that it was a Tom Cruise movie, although I can't remember the title. It just raced through your mind. That's what we do.
It evokes a response that you can't control. You can't unhear something.
And you can't.
All right, so right. Now, I want you to give us a demonstration or example. I remember in one of your shows you talked about in a cocktail party or some sort of party situation, you were asked by people what you thought of Obama, because there's people who like Obama and people who hate him, and not very many people in between. And I thought that if you can remember that was a great example.
Sure. That's what I say. That's what I say in America or anywhere in the world. What I say about Obama, I said, look, Africans have 50-plus countries in the world, more like 55, 57. But Africans have 50-plus countries in the world. Africans have well over half the world's natural resources. Africans have the largest population the world has ever seen. They're the most numerous people on Earth. Africans have the greatest piece of farmland the world has ever known, Africa. Africans live with me as a minority. I am a minority. There's not much more I could do for you other than make you president.
Yeah.
And that is a bombshell. You see, I am not debating tactics and policy. I am leveling people to the ground. But I'm not I'm not shouting epitaphs. What it is we're pointing out the truth in a closed society in a way that they can't stop. That's why it gives them fits. That's why Bob Whitaker on Stormfront, they don't want you to know he exists. They don't. They will ignore us. They will ignore him until they can't. But that's what we do. That's what we give you. You'll never go to jail for saying it. I don't want you doing anything you can go to jail for.
Yeah, you make that point real clear that this is not the time for doing anything violent or dealing steel, I think is the term you use.
Yes, dealing steel. This is not. There are two types of revolutions. In your lifetime, and I don't care how old you are, you have not seen a violent revolution, really. You've only seen velvet revolutions. Even when you go to war, you have to go to war under international law. The law is everything. You don't want to break the law. If someone's advocating violence, get away from them. No closed society has ever been brought down through violence. I'm going to repeat that. No closed society has ever been brought down through violence. The Berlin Wall was not brought down through bullets. It is biblical. In this sense, the walls of Jericho could not be brought down through gunfire. No. You have to have the golden horn. Bob creates golden horns. That's what he does.
Right.
He creates the silver whistle that can just shatter glass.
Right. And for people out there going, golden horn, silver whistle, you know.
Sound.
Sound
is everything.
It is. Because just as he demonstrated to you a minute ago, if he says the word achy, breaky heart or whatever, you know, there are responses that have been conditioned into you that you can't control. As soon as you hear those words, it's going to evoke a response. And if you can find the right frequency, you can bring anybody around. Now, Lord Nelson, how'd you find this guy?
How did I find Forrest?
Yes, this guy is unusual. Where'd you find this guy?
He's a student of Bob Whitaker, same as myself, and I first came across Forrest on Bob's blog. And he said he was going to do some audio shows, and sure enough, he has done, and they're very, very impressive.
They are. I need to get on Bob Whitaker's site. You know, I actually made an account over there, but I never got around to it. And, you know, I mean, I don't know who all is on that site over there, but whoever you guys are, you're some smart people. Because I'll admit, a lot of this stuff goes over my head a lot of times, but now that I can see, when I can see it demonstrated by Horace on his radio shows and stuff, you can't deny that it works. And so what are you guys doing over there? Are you just, like, taking time to work out these little sound bites that are so effective?
I'm just waiting to get my own TV show.
Yeah.
I'm doing what I can.
Basically, yes. What Bob has done, he's given a template, and that's the mantra. And that's what he helped develop. And he's been doing this stuff. The mantra that you see in place would have been thought of that probably back in the 50s or the 60s, as soon as this current pattern has came into progress. The problem is that we don't sell brands. So there may be an always a time to sell a brand, but there's not an always a time to sell like a political revolution. There's not. It has to be timed. This stuff is geared. It's time, just like Obama stuff. But to come back to the violent phrase, this is very, when it comes to, okay, the only way the U.S. government can be brought down through violence. When I say no closed society, and again, it is a closed society because they say they own the truth on diversity and race. And they have to enforce that or you're going to move somewhere else. It's just a fact. But you know, Yugoslavia did happen well after the Berlin Wall came down. But the Berlin Wall came down through sound. That's what I'm trying to say. Everything starts with a sound and a vibration. But sound is not what you think. Sound, there's a whole physics behind it. If you watch the Discovery Channel, they're going to show you how to kill things with sound, actually. And that's what it is. When they blew the golden horn, the walls of Jericho came tumbling down. But you got to have someone that can build you that horn. That's what Bob does. And that's what most people in this particular struggle, this movement, don't really understand. I'm just blowing it. I'm just showing you how to blow it. That's all I'm doing.
Right, right. Now, for people that might not understand what you're saying here, this golden horn thing, can you elaborate a little bit more on that?
It's just a talking point. Consider the mantra a big golden horn. What I did with Obama is I just issued a silver whistle. People that are sitting there, most of the brainwashed people that voted for Obama or would have voted for John McCain, think of them in terms of a plane of glass. What I did was I just blew a silver whistle that busted the glass.
Right. Now, when you say that we have a closed society, I know a lot of Americans think that we have a very open society. We have a lot of freedom. We can discuss a lot of things. How would you say that we have a closed society? Is it because people could get fired from work for discussing these things, or what?
Sure. I mean, let's face it. Most Americans think they have free speech. If you go on the job tomorrow and say whatever you want to say about race, you don't have free speech. They'll fire you. So you don't have free speech. You have an illusion of free speech on most subjects. It is a closed society, just like the Soviet Union. The Soviet Union said we own the truth on economics. It has to be scientific materialism. The United States, Anglosphere, and many other Western countries are saying we own the truth on race. You're just a social construct, that type of thing. But they're saying we own the truth. A closed society operates off we own the truth, and you cannot question our flat Earth.
It's not up for debate. Yes.
That's not up for debate. They're not debating. You won't hear. Bob Whitaker was on Fox News once, in some station in South Carolina. They don't like having him on. People in Washington don't like he's out there, but they can't really do anything about it because we play by the rules. We don't break rules.
And you make the point that that's the way to do it, because basically no revolution within our time that's been successful has been violent or open. It's always been done by playing within the system, playing within the rules.
Right. That is the game. That is why so many people get frustrated by it. The reason you've been frustrated by it over the last 10 years, and the reason you're just hearing me now, is it wasn't time for me to talk 10 years ago. When you have a demoralized society, a society that is really just had their brain cooked, basically, their brain scrambled, it takes 15 years to undo that. And I go into this on Follow the White Rabbit. I go into how demoralization works. I go into why we're talking now. It's 15 years since the internet was created. You're no longer demoralized. You're asking questions.
Yeah, you really believe that things have turned around as far as you say the demoralization. When did that start? About the 60s?
Right after World War II, I believe. And Lord Nelson has some ideals on that, I believe. But demoralization started World War II as soon as Hitler. Hitler came out and said, well, race is everything. And now all of a sudden they were anti-Hitler, you know.
Right.
So they did the direct opposite. 180. Instead of just tweaking things, trying to become more civil about race, what they did was they did a 180.
Right.
They said we have to blend white rabbits out of existence because they're all inherently racist and fascist and yada, yada, yada.
Right.
And that's why everyone listening to this, if you mention race, you're always compared to a Nazi.
Right. Lord Nelson, go ahead. You had something you wanted to say in that?
Yeah, we've sort of become a mirror image of the illusion or the propaganda of the Nazis. I'm not any Nazi or any big fan of the Nazis, but we're told to believe that everyone had to be 6.5 foot tall with blonde hair and blue eyes. Well, Adolf Hitler was 5'6". I don't think he had blonde hair. And the idea that, I mean, they may have had the point is we become an exact mirror image of what we're supposed to hate. And we're a mirror image of something that didn't really exist in the first place. You know, I'm not saying the Nazis were a nice regime, but we're a mirror image of the propaganda of the Nazis. So it becomes something even more hideous than what the Nazis were supposed to be, because at least Hitler didn't want to exterminate all the black people in Africa. But modern society, American, European, established government and media of all modern Western countries, they do want to wipe out black Europeans even in Europe.
Yeah.
In mass non-white immigration and assimilation into all white countries and only into white countries. Now the point of this is, there is no point in trying to justify your right to exist. If someone's trying to kill you, you don't argue with them that you're a very nice person and blah, blah, blah. I'm not advocating violence here. What I'm trying to say is there's no point in trying to justify. There's no point in talking about black crime stats or anything like that. If someone's trying to justify the extermination of white people, you've got to accuse them of being a brainwashed anti-white racist. Do it the way Horace has described so eloquently, but do not try and justify. Just attack them back. You know, call them names. They call you a white supremacist. Call them an anti-white racist.
Right.
And back it up.
Right. Now, this is an interesting dynamic, Horace, with the image that we have today that's been created of World War II and of Nazi Germany and stuff. And I think this is if you could take a minute, and this is a great time to kind of describe the problem, reaction, solution dynamic.
Oh man. Well, what they've done is they've created a problem in my let me go in certain places on the east coast of America. They bring in all kinds of Somali Muslims, and they create a problem of Somali Muslims or these non-Europeans in otherwise European homes, and then there's a reaction. And what they're trying to do is say that healthy reaction should be guilty and should be bad, and then the solution is, of course, to create a blended humanity in only white children's homes, in only white children's country. That is a problem reaction solution they're going with. The problem is that it hasn't worked.
Right. But this idea, because I mean I never heard of this before. I listened to your show. The problem reaction solution is that you introduce a problem, you actually create a problem in order to get a certain reaction, and then implement the solution that you're trying to achieve.
That's correct. You're going to create a problem to create a reaction to get a solution. I can't remember exactly what I went to on Follow the White Rabbit because I do this mentally. I know what they're doing. Well, let me give you exact. Let me give you one right in front of your face.
Yeah, give us another example.
Okay. What they've done is they've created a problem. They've created a problem with Muslim immigration into the West. The Hebrews were running this game. They're going to flood the West with Islam. Then you've got the antithesis. So you have a thesis, but an antithesis, the direct opposite. Then you go to war against Islam, right? And then there's a synthesis. There's a problem, and there's a reaction. You go to war against Islam to end radical Islam, but there's a synthesis. And the synthesis they want is, of course, World War III and this giant war with the Muslims. When the West goes to clear out the Muslims, they can expand greater Israel. It's a problem to get a reaction to get a solution. It won't work that way for them. But this is the type of thinking.
Right, and this is the type of thinking that our opposition is pretty natural from them. And but as you mentioned there, sometimes it can cause unintended problems. You can start a little brush fire with this.
Oh, everything. When you know your enemy, and your allies, you have allies. Little white rabbits have allies. Just because you don't think they're there. Every time little white rabbits see the little white rabbit sheeple a mile behind them, you have to remember that there's one's mile ahead of you. That's just natural law. Just because you don't see them, don't think they're there. But you can trip someone up big time. Because if you think someone's going to run problem, reaction, solution, let's say in ancient Egypt, they flood Egypt with Africans, and then there's a reaction, they create a guilt, and they end up blending themselves out of existence. That's not necessarily going to work this time.
Right. Yeah. Now, something you just alluded to here is that perhaps it's not just our enemy that's running problem, reaction, solution, but we have people on our side that we may not see. They may not be out in the open, but they're running this game too.
Sure. Of course you do. We're not. Don't think that you don't have someone on your side. You know, we play a simple game. I introduce a simple game. Me a white rabbit, you a white rabbit. This is a very simple game. But if you know your enemy's in powerful position and they're going to flood the place with immigrants, well, then you can work another angle on that too. Sure you can, because we'll come up with a different solution that they won't like.
Right, and that's interesting because I've been talking to a guy pretty recently. He's an American, but he lived over there in England for a while. And Lord Nelson, you're over there in England. And he talked about how he thinks that actually – bringing in tons of Pakistanis into England is probably the smartest thing that they can do, and he's using that problem reaction solution dynamic because you're bringing in non-whites that are so backwards and so strong into their religion and everything, and they have such alien customs that there's no way that they could possibly assimilate. And if you're going to try to eventually cause a reaction to stop immigration, the best kind of immigrant to bring in would be ones that are so foreign.
I agree with that in many respects, because it's the story of the frog in the pan of boiling water, isn't it? You know, if you just turn the heat up slowly, the frog will be boiled to death. But if you drop the frog straight in the boiling water, the frog will leap straight out and survive. Putting the country so fastly and so obviously, and also the illusion of anti-white racism is that the white Europeans will be morphed or replaced into some single ethnic colored ethnic entity. The reality is the world is not black and white. The non-white races are divided into many different groups, and the reality is one specific ethnic group will take over. In America, it's looking like becoming the Mexicans. In Europe, it's looking like becoming North African Muslims. And what people can see is that we're not morphing into a multiracial, multicultural utopian paradise. We're simply morphing into an Islamic state with a majority North African Muslim population to replace their native white populations of Europe.
Right.
And
right.
It's becoming so obvious, it amazes me when I still get some brainwashed anti-white retard who still sings the great melting pot, multicultural. The reality is that we're going to be replaced in Europe by North African Muslims. That's a fact.
Right. Well, and the thing is, though, is the attitude that I find unique that you're giving us here, Horace, is that we actually have people on the inside on our side. And,
sure.
And I don't hear any other white nationalists doing that. It's always, we're on the outside, we're ostracized, and the government's against us.
Because you're not doing what it has to be time. A consistent message, oh yes we can, is not going to work 5 years from now. It's kind of like this. Everyone listening to this has heard a song probably a year or two before anyone else, before maybe it even became a hit.
Right.
It happens all the time.
Yep.
Maybe your neighbor was a famous rapper, but he was singing the same song for 3 years and overnight he became famous. Sound is like that. That's random. What we're doing isn't random, so it has to be time. But you can't talk about, they're not going to pay attention to someone, you know, anything violent I call playing basketball, dealing steel, you're playing basketball. That's not the game. The game is baseball. So you got to get on the baseball message because there's no government in the world where you're going to throw a violent revolution, but there's no government in the world where they won't throw a velvet revolution.
Right.
It's just a different game.
Now, go ahead, Lord Nelson.
Yeah, Horace makes a very good point here. You're not going to find any friends anywhere if you're advocating the violence or using the N-word or saying really horrible and down bad things about non-whites. But you will find that you have got friends in quite remarkably surprisingly high places if you play the game the way that Horace is telling you to play the game. Or if you use the tactics that he's putting forward. I've met some people in their government positions. I mean, not really top government, but... and you'd be amazed if you use the approach of Bob Whitaker, or what Horace is teaching here, that you actually get a very positive response from a lot of these people. But if I start putting the same people and start talking about the Aryan master race and subhuman whatever, those same people who are very responsive would become very, very alien. What actual message is.
Exactly right. You know, I accidentally ran into somebody who was who had been pretty high up in the U.S. government on a federal level on accident. I ran into him in a public place, and I got to talking to him, and it was actually a bar, so we were, like, drinking. And I talked to him about my politics and everything, and I expected him to be offended by it, and he wasn't at all. And so I think that – but on the other hand – I could clearly know that he's not going to do anything that would get him in political trouble or anything. People, you know, they're waiting for that right moment. And these people are political animals. So, I mean, they know – first of all, they know who the enemy is, and they know what the enemy ideals are. They go up against them every day. They're in that environment. But they also know that you don't make a move. You don't play your hand before you've got the winning cards. And I think, you know, that's what our people need to understand right now, is that right now we're building a foundation. We're collecting skills, we're collecting weapons, and I'm not talking about literal weapons, but we're collecting the tools that we need to win this thing, and when the moment is right, we'll strike. But right now we're laying the groundwork, you know, and when the enemy is weak, that's when we'll approach it.
Well, definitely, but you have to understand that everyone at the top, any of our people, any of your people on the side, any government in the Western world is waiting for something like Bob to come out with a message and for something like me to get you going, I guess. You have to be on a consistent message. Words are loaded pistols in practical politics. You've got to be on that. They don't spend millions and millions of dollars developing talking points to go on Fox News and sound like chatting animals. The reason that talking points work is for the very same reason smart people think they don't. Smart people say that doesn't work because the masses are asses. Well, that's why they do work.
Yeah. No, yeah, exactly. You know, I hear people tell me all the time, white nationalists, that, oh, the Jews run the media, the Jews run the movies, and this and that. And of course, they're right. But then the same people go sit there and watch the movies and will recite back to you quotes from those movies all day long. So, I mean, being aware of the problem doesn't mean it's any less effective as a tool against you.
At this point in time, with Anglosphere and France or anywhere in Western civilization, all it takes is a consistent message. We have the message. It was been done. It's just had to be time. It had. If you listen to Follow the White Rabbit, you'll understand that now is time. In fact, if you go to the right of the page, you're going to see the talking points there. You're going to see the mantra. You're going to see what type of system you're in. It's easily explained, for the most part. As best I can do it easily. And that's why we're here. It's time for us to talk with you.
Okay, now, so when you say being on a consistent message, let me see if I can find the consistent message that we're supposed to be on. And either one of you guys can correct me if I'm running astray here. But basically, the consistent message from Bob Whitaker and you guys is that we as white people are trying to avoid genocide. Is that correct?
Yep. Yep.
We're not looking. Yep. We're not pushing anything else. This is just purely. We're on our side, trying to not be erased here.
That's exactly it. It's not about anything else other than trying to prevent the genocide of a whole race of human beings.
And that is the prerogative of our enemy. That's what they're trying to do. Is basically genocide us.
Exactly, and we must call them on it. There's no point in playing their game. Our enemy would love nothing more than for the three of us to sit here tonight ranting on about the Aryan master race and blah, 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 and Hitler was a great guy and scheming Jews and subhuman non-whites. They would just be rubbing their hands with glee. That is an anti-white's wet dream.
Right.
And there's no point. It's not what we're really about anyway. I'm not any Nazi or anything like that.
Right.
I'm just against genocide of a whole race of human beings.
Now, Lord Nelson, you've been on my show before, and I've heard you explain how no matter how the enemy phrases their reasoning or their logic, it all leads to our genocide. Can you talk about that for a little bit?
Well, that's a very good debating tactic. I talk about this like it's a schoolyard slanging match. The one thing that you have on your side, if you do get into some kind of debate with an anti-white, is just got to keep in mind they've actually got the hard job to do, because ultimately they have to justify the extermination of a whole race of human beings. That's what they have to do. They've got all the tools given to them by the media. Horace made the perfect point. They have their words like racist, Nazi, white supremacist. They bring up the Holocaust. This is exactly the point that Horace is making. It's not an accident that the establishment has put all these words and printed them into all our heads. But you must not play that game with them. You've got to call them out that you're simply against the extermination of a whole race of people, and just challenge them. Please say something to me now. Make a point that does not amount to white Europeans being replaced in Europe by people from somewhere else.
So if they try to say that, you know, say a Lutheran church is bringing in Somali immigrants from Africa into Minneapolis, Minnesota, and they're saying that, you know, they're helping them towards a better life or something like that, reality, what does that spell out for us?
Well, it doesn't end there, does it? It's not about a handful of black Africans in somewhere in America. It's about the many millions of non-white Mexicans crossing the border, the millions of other Africans, North African Muslims, etc., coming into the United States on a yearly basis. And would you like to say that you support that too?
Right.
I'm just asking you, do you support white Europeans becoming an ethnic minority in Europe? Do you have a problem with that? And if you say yes, I'm going to ask you then, do you support black Africans becoming a minority in African countries? If you agree with that, I'm going to call you a racist, because I think you're racist against black people.
What about people who say that race is you know, no longer an issue? We need to be colorblind.
In which countries are you referring to, please? Which actual countries are you making up logic to?
So you know, what if people, what you're saying is if people can be colorblind in the U.S., then why not be colorblind in China and flood China with people that are not Chinese?
If you use that against me, let's just say you play devil's advocate and you be an anti-white racist. If you give me that colorblind argument, I'm going to ask you what countries you're actually using that logic for. Are you actually saying that Africa should be colorblind to the extent that the whole population of Africa should have blonde hair and blue eyes and it wouldn't really matter? Do you really believe that? Are you sick? Are you an anti-black racist?
Right.
I think that's pretty racist against black people, personally.
Yep.
So just tell us, when you say that colorblind thing, which particular countries are you applying that logic to?
That's a great point. Now, Horace, I want to go back to some little note that I took down when I was listening to one of your shows. And you mentioned, and I thought this was a really key phrase, that action defeats fear. And I think that most all of us know that in our hearts. And that's why people want to be active. They want to get involved with something. They don't want to just sit around and be paranoid or angry about the situation. But so many times, and if you look back through the past of the movement here in the United States, that sort of action that people have taken has been of the wrong sort, perhaps violence or something like that. When you say action defeats fear, what kind of action are you saying that people should get involved in?
Well, when Obama was coming up, when they first released his "Oh Yes We Can," they were consistently shouting it. When anyone else shouted something for McCain or whatever, they were saying "Oh Yes We Can," "Oh Yes We Can." Action kills fear. What I'm talking about is verbal action, consistently defending yourself. The only one I want you to do, I want you on a consistent repeater. "Oh Yes We Can" was a consistent repeater. It's something everyone can do. Every white rabbit everywhere can do. Actually, every rabbit can do it, period. But it's just a consistent repeater. It's something, you know, all your life you've been shut down by being called a racist. I want you immediately to say, in your opinion, I'm a racist. You're just saying that because I'm white. Anti-racism is a code word for anti-white. Walk away.
Right. So you might have somebody who on Stormfront or some other site is really open with their beliefs under anonymous username and everything. But when they go to work and they're surrounded by their coworkers or when they go to church, they will not mention a word of their political beliefs, not mention a word that of their feelings about the ongoing genocide against us. They're afraid. They're intimidated. And you're saying that you can kill that fear by giving them something that they can say even in those circumstances?
Well, yes. What it is a starter. You know, you gotta start one step at a time. Not everyone's going to go to Obama rally and scream, "Oh, yes, we can." But they were doing it all on the streets. You know, they got used to doing it. You'd see someone else and do it. That is the essence of Follow the White Rabbit. When you say that at work, people are going to notify you. They're going to identify that. You're not saying I am a racist. You're not getting yourself in trouble, but you are defending yourself racially. You know, there are FBI agents that have been beat to death over being called racist, believe it or not. No, in your opinion, I'm a racist. You're just saying it because I'm white. Anti-racism is just a code word for anti-white. And I have a list of other talking points you can use, but that is a repeater. I want everyone white saying that over and over again.
Right. That's really interesting that you talk about CIA agents that have been called racist or whatever, because, you know, there's so many times I think that we get in this bunker mentality where we think that we can't go into certain professions or we can't go into certain places or we can't go into schoolyard, we can't go into church, we can't go into different places and express our point of views. Because I think a lot of times we've bought into that stigma that our views are somehow antisocial or wrong, and even on a subconscious level. But there's actually, I know personally of white nationalists that have gone into professions that are supposedly dominated by Jews, and they've gone in there and been able to be successful. And so I think you mentioned on one of your shows that Bob Whitaker himself, when he was interviewing for one of the Alphabet government agencies, just straight up told him that he was anti-Semitic, and he got the job anyway.
Sure. If they need you, they need you. If you listen to the first Follow the White Rabbit, you'll hear what I said. I can't remember exactly what I said, but I said what Bob said at a CIA interview, and they hired him.
Right. And the guy who was interviewing him was Jewish, and he straight up said, yes, I'm anti-Semitic, if that means that I think that, you know, they ought to be, you know, out of my country and in Israel or whatever. So, you know, if Bob can pull that off.
What he said is he was asked if he was an anti-Semite at an interview, at a very, very, at a government agency interview. I believe it was a CIA at the time. And he said, affirmative, I am an anti-Semite. I believe that everyone deserves a home, which is to say I believe all Jews deserve a home, somewhere they can Judaize each other. But I also believe all Jews should go to their home. I don't like being Judaized, so yes, that makes me an anti-Semite.
Right. And
jaws drop. The place just, whoa.
Right. But the way he phrased that, he can say that to a Jewish interviewer right across from him, and it takes the balls, no doubt. But he can phrase it in a way that there's nothing that you can really attack him on there.
No, you can't. He's just he's being Bob. That's that. He's got the gift. He can put together that Britney Spears "Hit Me, Baby, One More Time" for the white nationalists. That's what he does. That's what he's made his living doing, bringing down closed societies. He knows all about this stuff. Again, I'm not the whistle. I'm not the horn. I'm just blowing it for you. That's what I do. I'm a voice. That's all I am.
Right, and that's, you know, we only need one Bob Whitaker, or we only need a couple of them, and the rest of us can just, you know, say what we've been trained to say. But we have to train ourselves. We have to go over and take an active effort to learn these tools that will give us the opportunity to express our views in a way that nobody can really, they can't really call us on them, whether it's in church or whether it's in work or wherever.
No, what Bob does is he goes right for the throat. He doesn't play games. There's no arguing in full-spectrum practical politics. What we are doing is going at an enemy, and we are going relentlessly at them with the GSOC charge, the genocide. That's what we're doing over and over again, and that's all it is. It's no different, really, than the average person, the average white rabbit listening to this has maybe been to a political rally. Maybe they've been to a Republican or a Democratic campaign rally. That's all we're doing.
Right.
It's just our own little rally. I'm just, there's no restrictions on this. So you can do whatever you want to with it. But it's simply repeating. That's all you're doing.
You know, that's interesting because really we are on enemy territory right now. And that really, in a way, that kind of opens things up because we don't have any restrictions. The opposition is the one that has to kind of guard the gates and watch the moats because, we can go anywhere. We're on enemy territory.
Yeah.
We have nothing to defend anymore.
Right. Well, that's true, and they don't know who their enemy is necessarily. They don't know who's around them that may be their enemy. It's very tough. Everyone knows. Everyone on this planet can see Israel. They can see Hebrews. They can see the people. They can see the Federal Reserve System. There's whole blogs devoted to the Bilderbergers. But no one can see our allies. What we are doing is we are conditioning a populace. What we are doing is basically being on a consistent message. Everything starts with a sound. Everything starts with a vibration. Before you swing a samurai sword, even in violent warfare, you have to say, huh, yeah. That's
right.
How this works.
Right. And to the listeners out there, you know, it's not just Bob Whitaker. I mean, Paul Craig Roberts is another guy that's 100% on our side, and I believe he was in the Reagan administration too. And you know, you got guys like the guys at VDare. There's people at all levels of society that are on our side, and those are the ones we know about. As Horace says, there's a lot of them that, you know, politicians are you know, they're by their nature, they don't let you know what they're doing until they do it.
Well, yes, and also we're dealing with two concepts. We're dealing with what you see is what you get, Weissy Wig, you know, and you're dealing with wide sky. What you don't see can kill you politically. What I call wide sky, and there's a lot of that. Maybe you've seen some bill was going to be passed in Congress. Someone switched sides and hung it and dropped the thing or something, or it just didn't work. That's happening right now with healthcare. A lot of Democrats, the Blue Dog Democrats, switched sides. That is all wise guy stuff, backroom dealing and whatnot. There's no voting going on. There's no voting going on. It's full spectrum practical politics. There's no voting necessarily.
And this is an important concept because so many of our people, again, like I said, have gotten in that bunker mentality, and they think that there's a conspiracy out there and that everybody already knows their roles that they're playing and it's all written, and then, you know, it's just one step after another. But actually the situation is very, very fluid. I mean, I could guarantee you that Obama thought that this healthcare thing would go through. Maybe not smoothly, but it would go through. And now it's very, very iffy.
Oh, no doubt about that. When you're there are three types of politics. There is practical politics, which is what I want you to do. It's just being opening your mouth the right way, having what to say, and knowing when to say it. It's simple as repeating a talking point. Then there's conventional politics, which is what Mommy and Daddy Rabbit do at the voting booth. That is time based. That is very rule based. Okay, then there is full spectrum practical politics, which is engaging, taking down an opponent, a system, a corporation, whatever, by any means necessary under the rules, but never breaking the rules. We don't break any rules. Someone like me has never been in conventional politics. Now full spectrum practical politics a lot of times may involve conventional politics, but it doesn't necessarily involve any voting. Generally, it's non-voting. I always deal in non-voting politics, and I always get to ask the question, why is practical politics called non-voting? Well, it's because it's non-voting. That makes it very, very practical.
All right. Now, we're almost out of time. I mean, we've got like 10 minutes left here, but there's something that I want you to touch on. I know you can't go through the whole thing in this short period of time, but one of the most interesting shows that I've heard you do so far, and I haven't listened to them all, related to the situation over there in Russia. And I know that there's a lot of white nationalists out there that are very curious about what side is Putin on and what's going on over there in Russia. Can you give us, you know, relating this directly to practical politics, could you give us an example of how Putin played practical politics?
Oh, man. What they've tried to do is they tried to flood Russia. They tried to flood Russia with a bunch of non-Europeans, and they have all these caucuses. And when they did that, he started running something called an ethnic conflict model, which is – I got to go into some details. But what he's doing is he's not running an ethnic conflict model against his white rabbits unless they're stupid. If you know the game, you're doing quite well there. But he can counter it. He is countering everything. In 9 and 10 of my show, I'm going into 10 hasn't been released yet, but I'm going more into Russia, because they play full spectrum practical politics in a way no one has seen. Because he's got a consistent vision of the past and the future, and they are homogenous in decision-making authority. They are homogenous Aryan. They're not it's difficult because it's all wide sky. It's what you don't see can kill you politically. They've been accused of killing the Green Revolution in Iran. He can do that, but he's not going to show his hand because he does his job. He's a front man for a very large structure, and you won't get a good read on him because he does his job, probably just like you at your work. But he is there, and he is very European. When Vladimir Putiput first came onto my radar in 1996, and I go into this in 10 to prove my point, because I'm always going to try to make a point with you, he was Sobchak. Sobchak, I believe, was – I don't know his full name is Sobchak. I spell it out on 10, which I'll be releasing this week, but – he was basically in his organization in St. Petersburg. He was a mayor of St. Petersburg, I believe. I don't believe it was Moscow. It was St. Petersburg. And Sobchak, he did something there, and I'm sure he was still working for the KGB or the modern FSB on some level. But he worked for this guy, Sobchak, who was a mayor of St. Petersburg, let's see. And when he lost his election, everyone that worked for Sobchak was allowed to carry on under the next mayor. He refused. He said he would rather be hanged for loyalty. And he refused to work for them. He is extremely loyal to Europeans. So don't think just because you don't read the maneuvers, just listen to Follow the White Rabbit. He is very much there. He is playing a role. How significant he is, I have no idea. For all I know, he could be related to ancient European royalty or something. I don't know.
Right.
But he is significant, and he is giving our enemy – he killed their New World Order. He killed it. He killed it in Georgia. And he is giving them fits as they set up this big scenario they're going into. And I go into this, and it'll fill you in. It'll at least you getting thanking you, letting you think how these guys think. It's letting you think out of the box. Because what you're doing is looking at the world under what you see is what you get. And you're getting a lot of mixed messages. I don't care who you are on Earth. Putin will give you a million mixed messages, but actions speak louder than words.
That's exactly right. And I think the thing that we can look at, you know, sometimes we get kind of down. And that's one of the things I love about your show, Horace, is it's so positive always. I mean, it's fuel for our soul. I mean, you can listen to that show. And like I said, there's some things on there that I'm kind of iffy on, but, you know, as far as like the science stuff. But, I mean, I can listen to your show all day long and come away feeling pumped up from it. And one of the things here is, you know, when you're talking about Putin, you know, when Putin came into power there, Russia was jacked up. I mean, I can remember reading in Forbes at that time, it was essentially like a mafia-run nation with these oligarchs. And he turned things around in a very short period of time. I mean, at that point, America and a lot of other countries were just writing Russia off as that they would never be a big player again, or at least not for a long time. And he turned that nation around in a very short period of time. So with the right – and he was an ex-KGB guy, and he had these skills that Bob Whitaker has. And you've talked about that before, that you know a lot of what the KGB did and what the FBI does and stuff, or the CIA, is not – you know, James Bond stuff. It's actually this practical politics. It's pushing this propaganda.
It active measures, as they call it in the KGB, the old KGB and the modern FSB, Aktivnaya Mera Pranacha. That's where I learned it. You can get online. I learned it from communists. And he knows it. He knows how to push buttons. You know, when the Russian nationalists are allowed to say, you're not allowed to say Russia for white people. They're squashing that for human rights reasons and for international reasons. But you're allowed to say Russia for the Russians all day long. Everyone understands that, but the white nationalists.
Well, you know what, man? That's something that I've been heavily talking to somebody with around here about that for America, America for the Americans. And it's kind of a way of backdooring the race issue.
Oh, sure it is. And you can go to town once you understand the concepts, the game in front of you, you can play it, but you don't understand baseball. Every white nationalist understands basketball because that's what everyone talks about. We're going to blow up this, we're going to blow up that. Timothy McVeigh didn't bring down the government. He blew up a government building. Al-Qaeda didn't bring down the government or whoever else. Whoever blew up the World Trade Center, let's assume it's Al-Qaeda. We don't get into conspiracies because peas in a pod don't have to conspire. But and that's good for us, right?
Right.
We won't ever have to conspire. We just play follow the white rabbit. Me a white rabbit, you a white rabbit. But that didn't bring down the government. It only reinforces it. Every time anyone gets shot up, and they blame it on white nationalists, all they do is crack down harder. That's how closed society works. You bring it down with sound. Now, Yugoslavia happened after the Berlin Wall several years later. That can happen. Don't think some war concept can't come down. But let's face it, ladies and gentlemen, I have the largest army the world's ever seen in America, and Russia is right there too. So we ain't worried about wars.
Right.
We're worried about making them go. We're worried about turning their head and making things go our direction. But it doesn't start with anything violent. It starts with sound, and sound is every bit more vicious and cutting than a bullet, and that's the way this game is played. It isn't Wild Wild West. That those tactics don't work, and that's why they've never worked in the past 50 years. It does start with a sound, but it has to be at the right time. The reason we've never had this conversation is because it wasn't time for us to have this conversation, unfortunately.
Right.
We can't speed up the clock.
Right. And, you know, there's a wave coming, and you and I, we're all trying to ride it because and it's not what I do or what Horace does. You know, this thing's coming no matter what we do. It's just where we're going to position ourselves on it. And it's very interesting that you mentioned you just now said, ladies and gentlemen, we're out of time. We've got like 2 minutes left. But sometime I'd like to have you come on again and discuss what you think women have, what kind of role they have in this, and the very important role that they have in this, and the way the enemy has miscalculated with their plays on feminism.
Yeah. That's a whole new – Follow the White Rabbit is a game that girls and women play more than anyone else. Vladimir Putin did not come to power, in my opinion, on what males were doing. They were playing Follow the Russian Rabbit. They were using basically what women do in the office when they get together and run a game on a bunch of men. Women do it better than anyone else, and our enemy has miscalculated time and time again over this.
That's right. And, you know, we're out of time here, but I wanted to make this one last point and agree with Horace there, is that, you know, when you talk about violence or things like that, like you said, Timothy McVeigh, all the terrorists, you know, the government just feeds off of that stuff. That's the game that they know how to play the best, you know, or the establishment. That is their game. They've got more guns, they've got more bullets, they've got more bombs, and so they want to play that game. The game they don't want to play is this practical politics.
They do not want you playing baseball. They don't want you. That's why you won't see Bob Whitaker is not. They don't investigate him or harm him. Or there's nothing they can do about him. But they don't want you knowing he exists. They don't want you listening to something like me, because we don't play basketball. Basketball is a different game.
Right.
Basketball may come back. basketball is doing anything violent, dealing steel. Wild Wild West will always come back. That may be in fashion somewhere. It may come back, but we have to play baseball. And what we're teaching you to do is to play baseball.
Right. And
they play baseball. They want you playing basketball because you'll never win.
Right, right. All right, we got to cut it off there. Thanks for coming on, Lord Nelson.
Okay.
And thanks for coming on, Horace. And everybody, check out Follow the White Rabbit and Bob Whitaker's site. And until next week, walk tall, stay proud, and don't give them an inch.